Tracy and Emily are smart, lovable sisters who really love Lucifer for the plot. Yeah, the plot, which they overthink.
Hello, I am here with my sister, Tracy Guy Decker, and she does use a hyphen.
And I'm here with my sister, Emily Guy Birkin, no hyphen. And together, we are Lightbringers, where we illuminate the deeper meaning of the Crime-Solving Devil TV show. And yes, we are overthinking it so much. So today, we're going to overthink 209 and 210, Homewrecker and Quid Pro Ho. I just wanted to say that.
I get it. The term quid pro quo got a lot more political than it was when these episodes originally came out.
True. True that. So these episodes were interesting. I feel like they did, the two of them together did some cementing of some relationships. So I mean, we knew Chloe had affection for Lucifer. She's made that clear. But in these two episodes, it's taken to a new level. Like when she saves Lux, and then in the second one, in Quid Pro Ho, which is not actually easy to say.
Not very easy to say. Yeah.
When she is basically forced into an impossible either or of affirm her trust and loyalty to Lucifer, or work to convict the man she knows is responsible for her father's killing, and she chooses Lucifer. So I feel like those are some pretty serious cementing of bonds between the two of them in these two episodes.
Yeah.
And also Maze and Chloe. Like,
I know
that they were roommates and they sort of bonded over the girls' night stuff.
And then I know Chloe really appreciates how much Maze loves Trixie.
But the fierceness with which she says to Amenadiel, "Nobody hurts Chloe on my watch." Like, it's intense. I don't think we've seen that from her. It's always been sort of, yeah, whatever, she's all right. I'm not sorry I didn't kill her.
Well, and it shows Maze does everything fiercely. She doesn't do anything by halves. I mean, even when like she knows what Amenadiel is up to, she doesn't just say, "I know what you're up to."
Right. She moves the bomb to his car.
Uses it to blow up, which is ridiculous and kind of amazing. And it's also, Linda makes a very good point about what Amenadiel has done to Maze.
True.
And his lying to her in that way and how hurtful that is.
I think all of the characters, actually, we got some additional depth. These two episodes were much more character than case driven. You know, we see in the Goddess, I think we knew she was sort of casual with human lives, like from Trip to Stabby Town, where she like doesn't care if we are killing one another. But in these two episodes, we see her actually willing to like take steps to take the life of a human for whom her son cares. And that like level of lack of empathy.
Yeah.
I think we haven't seen that from her before. I don't think. I mean, we've seen lack of empathy, but not like this. And it works insofar as when the character was first introduced, and like Amenadiel was like, "You're scared, brother. What could possibly scare you?"
Yeah, that's,
you know,
true.
And then you meet her and you're like, "What? She's not that bad." I mean, that's like an adult still being like having the fear from when they were a child of their parent. But no, she's actually totally unpredictable and dangerous.
Well, and that fits within the like the greater mythos, both of this, the show, and then also of, you know, if you trace it back to biblical idea of like a feminine divine. Well, if there's biblical idea, but, you know,
We talked about when she was first introduced, we talked about Asherah and the ways that that sort of divinity seems to have been tried to be erased and not quite.
What strikes me is that because she's the goddess of creation, but she is also the goddess of destruction. And so like, and the reason why she was banished to hell was because she was sending plagues and storms and, you know, destroying humans.
So, right. Which she said in Stabby Town, she wanted like a lot of humans to die mm-hmm. to get
his attention.
To get God's attention. Yeah.
Yeah. And so like that fine line between creation and destruction is actually, I think, really interesting. I mean, even just thinking in the Jewish tradition of, you know, the day of rest, you do not create or destroy. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And like that is, it's not one or the other. It's both, because they are both, I mean, they're two sides of the same coin. They're both the same level of chaos.
I'm not sure I agree with that, but they do have,
you don't think
related creation has generative properties.
Yeah. You don't think creation is chaos?
I don't think it's the same level of chaos. Because I think in creation, there actually can be creation of order. You know, it take like, there's a whole bunch of just like random atoms, but they're aligned in a specific order to be me.
I was thinking more, kind of the biological, like the chaos of childbirth, and like kind of comparing that to death, which in some ways can be orderly.
I mean, if you're just talking about straight up messiness, then I agree with you. I in my mind, chaos is different than messiness.
Well, I guess it's more like chaos. I'm going by unpredictability. So there is order in the atoms that make up you, but it's unpredictable what that's going to be,
or sometimes all too predictable.
Yeah.
Which I'm seeing my therapist about.
Yeah.
Speaking of therapists, actually, I'm going to bring us back to the show.
Oh yes, absolutely.
Something really, for me, really, I don't know what the right word is. It's like poignant, I guess. There's something really resonant and poignant in the way the face that Lucifer makes on Linda's couch when she's like, yeah, you've stopped looking because you found it and it's Chloe. Mm-hmm. She didn't say it in those words, but clearly that's what she meant. And then in the next scene, Chloe's like being stood up by him, and he's like flips that phone over because he can't face it. He can't face how he feels about her. And that was directly from, or the implication in the writing is that reaction that he has is directly the result of the breakthrough that he had on the couch.
Yeah. If his appointment was 24 hours later,
yeah, he would not have shown up.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It seems like it's a lot of revelations for someone who's not very self-aware all at once. You know, he has this revelation that Los Angeles is his home, Lux is his home. And then he has this revelation that, you know what, I could lose Lux and I'd still be home. And then Chloe saves Lux for him. And, you know, it's like, holy shit, she really cares.
Yeah, why did she do that?
I mean, why did she do that?
That's the thing that, I mean, that's the crux of the conversation with Linda is why would she do that for me?
And so recognizing that there is something there, an affection there that is difficult for him to accept. And then for Linda to kind of guide him to the idea of you've stopped looking, and like all of that is going to be like, yeah, it's completely in character, and I don't want to say reasonable, but it fits.
It's understandable.
It's understandable, comprehensible why he would then be like, yeah, I'm not going to go. Kind of gone, but I'm not going to go.
Yeah. Yeah. These two episodes are full of revelations for lots of folks too. Amenadiel too, when he realizes like quid pro quo is the first time that we learn that Chloe is the result of a miracle that God asked Amenadiel to perform. So, which becomes central to a lot of the series, really. And we just learn that here. And, you know, Amenadiel's first response is like, I've been a pawn, which is really important in the story structure to sort of put Amenadiel in that kind of awkward, like he's already feels like he's a fallen angel and he's really like struggling with having disappointed in dad and now feeling anger at dad. Like it's important to the story structure. And there's also a certain part of me that's like 6,000 years or whatever of existence, and you're just now realizing that. Like, I mean, I guess you had to get out of the Silver City to actually like gain some of that awareness.
Well, and I feel like some of that also has to do with the, like, the triangulation of his parents, him and Lucifer.
Yeah.
Because so often he is like, when he's talking to his mother, it's like, why do you care so much about Lucifer? Like, I'm here with you. And now with this, like, dad sent me to do this miracle for Lucifer. So what the hell? And so, like, I think that there's a lot of, like, the sibling rivalry. And that is going to cause him to feel more like a pawn than
just having done the will of God.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. That's another completely comprehensible, like, the way that you see the brothers interact with each other, the way that you see them interact with their mother. And, you know, obviously this is a dysfunctional family, but even in functional families, siblings,
yeah,
struggle with feeling like, you know, well, aren't I as good as that one?
Yeah.
And so it makes sense to me that, you know, 6,000 years, this would be the thing that... gets him, because it's Lucifer. If it was just some random woman, like if it were like Ella, it would be like, that's weird. Why did he have me do that? I'm not a big fan of him having had me do that, but why did he have me do that? But you know,
this is a case where once again, some of, you know, those around God think they know why God behaved a certain way. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, since it's our job to overthink, I also want to talk about when that scene where he has no idea what's happening in Chloe's apartment because they're about to go to court, because he's just coming to apologize for standing her up. Mm-hmm. And Penelope assumes that he's there because of the trial. And he says, who killed my father? Nietzsche? No, your father. That reference to Nietzsche. I was like, oh, that was just for nerds like me.
Yeah. what I love is that they go from that joke to, like, less than 5 minutes later when he's congratulating Penelope on being so poised. She's like, I was just acting and I've been through this before. It's my second time at a trial. And he's like, maybe it's like butt stuff.
Right.
Like, less than 5 minutes.
From Nietzsche to butt stuff. Yeah. Yeah, easier the second time. Yeah.
It's like, oh my goodness. God bless Rebecca De Mornay, who plays Penelope, because, like, her look of, like, what's going on? He says
that. And Tom Ellis, too, who delivers the Nietzsche line with, you know, the same seriousness that he approaches his craft as the Nietzsche line and the butt stuff.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of having no idea what's going on, the scene where Maze knows that Dan has slept with
Charlotte. And she keeps making sex innuendos.
Yes. And, like, and Lucifer is so clueless. Like, once even Dan recognizes, like, what she's doing, because he's pretty clueless, because she's like, you want to probe that angle? What's up?
From and, every, like, looking. Position.
Yeah. And then, like, it takes Lucifer so long.
Dan has to actually say it.
Yes. And I know some of that is, like, he just can't wrap his head around the idea of either of those things, that his mom is sexual or that Dan is sexual. Like, I think that, like, just so, like, he doesn't think of either of them in that way. And then even if he did, he wouldn't put them together.
Although he does, when he introduces her to Linda, he says, this is my mom in a disturbingly hot body. Yes. Something like that.
Yeah. Well, like, he recognizes that her human form is
attractive,
yes, and horrifyingly so.
Which, again, feels pretty anachronistic, but that's okay. I forgive him.
Yeah,
it's funny.
Well, no one likes to think about their parents having sex. I mean,
yeah, I don't want to think about that.
And then, like, as much as you don't want to think about them having sex with each other, you really don't want to think about them having sex with other people. Like, it's bad enough being like, yeah, we know that had to have happened. You know, our parents had sex at least twice. Like, then the idea that, yeah, I'll never call you stepdad. I do want to talk about a little bit about Homewrecker. There's a couple things in there that I thought were interesting. First, like, it's very clear that Dean Cooper, right, was the dead real estate mogul's name, right?
I think so.
Building. Yeah. He was clearly, like, Trump basis. Like they call, like he worked in like the Cooper building, and you know, it's a dynasty with his son. He had a throne in his house that was so ugly.
Ostentatious. Yeah.
Yeah. His son was named Eric, which and then the story of how Lucifer's lease was written in lipstick
on a stripper's thong.
On a stripper's thong. Yeah. Like that all feels like, wonder where they got those from. And this would have, I think this came out in fall 2016.
Yeah. November 2016.
Yeah. So
I
think that is like, there was a reason why they did all of that. You know, it was different enough.
Yeah.
Los Angeles, not New York, blah, blah, blah. So I thought that was interesting and worth noting. The other thing was the rival real estate mogul, Eleanor Bloom. Mm-hmm. I appreciated the moment between her and Chloe where Chloe's abusing her power, but she's not wrong, which is like, you know, a murder investigation can tie up a real estate deal for years.
Yep.
And that Bloom's immediate response is like, I could use some of you on my team.
Right.
Someone like you on my team. Just a quick moment of female assertiveness, competency, and like an appreciation, which is just, it feels rare, you know, like it feels like, so Eleanor Bloom is not supposed to be sympathetic, but she's like clearly intelligent, driven, and like doesn't care that she's not sympathetic. And her only want is to destroy everything that this other guy had, which like he seemed like a piece of crap. So kind of understandable, you know, and then the fact that she recognizes what Chloe is able to do is also just pretty cool. Like, I don't know. I appreciated that because I feel like you don't often see that. If you see a woman being assertive, someone will comment on it in a negative way,
right,
or in an overly positive way, rather than it just be like, I'm impressed. You know your shit and you're good at it. So I appreciated that little moment, that interplay. I did wonder though, with Lux, you know, being historic, it was like, they wouldn't have changed the, like the mirror where there's a crack, and he's not using the same stools that he used in the 40s. Like, I'm sorry, they would have changed the furniture. So like he had all this history. And so I'm like, all right, like when he was talking about the tunnels underneath, I'm like, I believe that.
I believe the crack in the mirror stayed if it was high enough that, you know,
yeah,
like I could believe the crack, the stools. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know about the stools. Cause at least the way that it reads on screen, it's kind of a modern looking nightclub. It doesn't look like a seedy bar.
Yeah.
Like that hasn't changed much since the 40s. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I was willing to buy it.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. So, but I like, and that was the way that Chloe saved it was another one of those, like, it shows her competence. Mm-hmm. Because like she realized like, oh, there's another way.
Well, she said to him, we have to find a legal way.
Yeah. And so having that like, oh, wait a minute. And not only that, but also being able to expedite because she knew someone in the historical office or whatever it was. City Hall. Yeah. So, I mean, again, like it's so refreshing seeing someone who's a smart, tough woman, who's competent, and it just being what she does. Similarly, like with the fight scene between Maze and what was that guy's name?
I don't remember. The Chinese mafia guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. The bruiser.
That was awesome. Although I did notice like they shortened the scene a little bit by just throwing him out the door.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So like, we don't have to see the beginning of it. I'm like, yeah, we don't have time to choreograph the entire fight scene. So even with that, with like, you know, Dan was just like, what are you kidding me? And it's like, no, I mean, Maze, she's like, yeah, she's terrifying, but look at that guy. It's just like,
mm-hmm. It's interesting though, that like the reason they were willing to give him up is because he was already dead. Like even with the fight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did they know he was already? Well, yeah.
They were responsible for killing him.
Yeah.
At least that was the implication.
Yeah. That's true. And they knew the address where to find him, which they wouldn't have if someone else had killed him.
Right.
Yeah, that is one thing about the legal case. Like, even if Chloe then had said Lucifer is lying, then wouldn't that call into question his testimony?
Yeah, but the goddess said that she would have him plea because he didn't know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
because the client Perry didn't realize how much he was winning.
So
she was going to have him plea.
That's a good point. Yeah. What do you think about the way that Dan and Maze handled Perry?
Well, I know Dan has some major reservations later in the show. Mm-hmm. Like, it's one of the things he feels super guilty about. I don't know. I mean, like, as a viewer, like as a consumer of literature, there's a great deal of poetic justice that he had used these crime syndicates against one another and then gets caught in the trap that he set for himself.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's definitely a lot of
hoist by his own petard.
What's that mean?
Oh, it's a, I can't remember which play, but it's Shakespeare said he's hoist by his own petard, which means like you set a trap that for someone else and it catches you.
Like Haman.
Yeah.
Killed on his own.
Exactly. Powers. Exactly.
Little Purim in there for y'all.
We bring all the Jewish holidays to the yard. Yeah. And it's actually entirely possible that even if Dan and Maze didn't hasten it,
they would have found him.
They would have found him anyway. Cause like he was giving a news conference, but there's Chloe is like in the next episode, and which we'll talk about next time, but is like, this is not how it's supposed to go. Which
I don't know. I mean, I think that the showrunners took steps to make sure that he was completely unsympathetic, mm-hmm. right? Because even when they catch him, he's coming out of a strip club, like zipping mm-hmm. his fly up. He says in the conference that he's happy to get back to his family, but then the immediate thing you see is he's stumbling out of a sex club. So, mm-hmm. like the showrunners went to pains to make sure mm-hmm. that we did not have any kind of sympathy for the man. And so I didn't have any kind of sympathy for the man. I followed them, mm-hmm. you know, in the bigger picture. Yeah. Punishment in and of itself is never like my first choice mm-hmm. for society.
Yeah.
That character was painted as fairly irredeemable though.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, I know it causes a lot of angst for Dan. Mm-hmm. moving forward, mm-hmm. much to Maze's confusion.
Yeah.
But we'll get to that once we watch
this
episode.
We'll get there. Yeah. So you mentioned before we got on, you were saying, like, I told you I was going to be a few minutes late, and you said like, oh, I'm going to go put on some Guy Diaper liner. So I just want to say Lucifer's Guy liner is on point.
I don't know if it's on point, but it is on. I think he needs to sharpen the pencil a little bit. It is very thick in these episodes.
Oh, it's very
thick.
I love it. Like, I just was just like, just gaze into my eyes for hours and I'll be happy.
My husband walked in while I was watching to prep for this, and he was like, is he wearing makeup? Yes, hon. Yes, he's wearing makeup.
I'm sure we've talked about it previously where like it took me a while to be like, he's got to be wearing makeup. And part of it is, I have a tendency to just kind of take things at face value. So I can very vividly remember watching a Marx Brothers movie. And it was not the first time I'd watched a Marx Brothers movie when I was a kid. Like, we watched it.
Tito Grouch's mustache was really mustache.
And I was just like, and Dad said something about a grease paint mustache. I was like, that's paint? And he's like, of course it's paint. And like, now part of it, like, I want to excuse little 8-year-old me. It's black and white. I think part of the reason why I realized, or we talked about it, was it was on TV and someone dressed as Groucho was introducing it in between commercials. And that was very clearly paint. But I'm sympathetic to your husband because there is a like, yeah, that's just what they look like when you see someone on screen.
Ellis gave an interview at one point where he talked about how like he had taken it over himself and like how he came out looking like Cleopatra. I think he was talking about season two because a lot of eyeliner in season two.
You know, and I do not have a problem with it, you know, like just if eyeliner brings joy and it was clearly making him happy and it makes me happy. So, you know, we want the things that spark joy in our lives. Oh, and for us, it's heavy Guy liner.
Apparently. All right. Well, I have overthunk it enough.
You think we done overthunk it enough?
Yeah. You got any final fluff?
The interaction between Ella and Dan, how she is able to like, well, because he immediately goes, Charlotte Richards, like,
right.
And then he's like, how did you know?
Right.
And it's like, and the only reason why Chloe didn't notice something was because this is a major upsetting day
she's
for her.
Distracted.
Like she's distracted by other things. And Ella going through like, well, you had a honey blonde hair that was longer than Chloe's and curlier. And I noticed like made up this whole thing. I was just like, are you kidding? Come on.
No, like I saw your butt pucker when when she said her name. Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny because Lucifer is so oblivious so often. But then there's stuff like that where Dan is so oblivious, even though like, Dan's not a stupid guy. He's wrapped up in himself, I guess. That was a fun, fluffy moment.
Sounds like your dog thinks we've overthunk it enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
Poor puppy.
Poor puppy.
Our theme song is Feral Angel Waltz by Kevin MacLeod from Incompetech.com. Licensed under Creative Commons. By attribution 4.0 license. Visit the show notes for the URL. I am an artificially generated voice, powered by Narrakeep.com. Lucifer is a Warner Brothers production that first aired on Fox and then Netflix. Tracy and Emily are not affiliated with Fox, Netflix, nor WB. If you liked this episode, subscribe to keep overthinking with them, and visit the show notes for other ways to connect.